It is 7:31, time once again for Community Forum, and we are very lucky to have with us live in the studios this morning Aman Ahmed Kamas, who is a journalist, a translator, and an activist, and lives in Baghdad. She is the former director of the International Occupation Watch Center in Baghdad and is a member of Women's Will organization, which focuses on defining and defending women's rights outside political party interests and opposing incarceration of women as hostages. Aman regularly publishes articles on women's conditions in Iraq under the occupation in a monthly newspaper called Okul. For the past 3 years, she has been documenting crimes committed by U.S. and Iraqi forces and is also involved in mobilizing emergency relief, medicines, food, and clothing for victims living under occupation, especially women and children living in refugee camps. Aman, thank you very much for spending time with us this morning.
Thank you.
Let me begin and ask you, what is it that brings you here to the U.S.?
What brought me here is to tell the American people about, to inform them about what's happening in Iraq now, for the last 3 years under the occupation, the kind of destruction that's going on in Iraq for the last 3 years, the bombing of cities, the killing of people, the detention of tens of thousands of Iraqi men and some women, the missing issue, the women conditions, the reality on the ground, our life, how we are living in the last 3 years under this occupation. Because as far as I can see, I mean, what's said here about what's happening in Iraq is only about the political process, about the meetings, about the things that are happening between the politicians with the American ambassador, their meetings, their, you know, discussions, their decisions. But not much is said about what real life is in Iraq, the insecurity, the collapse of the economy, these kind of things. And I am meeting the American people in public meetings, I'm meeting friends. Meeting with the media like now, doing interviews. And surprisingly enough, I find that the American people, as wonderful as they are, but they don't really know what is going on there.
All right, so maybe you can paint a picture for us. Perhaps start and tell us geographically what areas do you and your organizations cover?
All Iraq. I mean, wherever there is something interesting, something important that I want to expose, to talk about, I go and I write. For example, 2 months ago I was in Basra. I spent a week in Basra documenting the situation of women and families there. Because in Basra now there is a very big problem, which is called the homeless families. There are thousands and thousands of families. There is a society actually in Basra now. It's called the Society for Defending Homeless Families. These families, since 3 years, they live in bombed public buildings. They live in deserted houses. They live in illegal houses, you know, housing. They built very, very simple room or whatever they need, and they sit there, they live there in very inhuman conditions. Basra now is a very ugly city. Basra used to be one of the most beautiful cities in Iraq. Actually, brides and, you know, when young people get married, they go to Basra for honeymoon. My aunt did that, my mother, my brother did that. They go there for, you know, and all families, not only me. They go there, especially in winter because it's warm. They go there to spend honeymoon. And I didn't see Basra in the past, but I have pictures of this, of my family who went there. It used to be very beautiful. Now, when I went to Basra, the first half hour when I entered the city and, you know, was driving the streets, I was crying bitterly. Basra is simply hills and mountains of garbage, and there are 16 rivers in Basra because it's like a delta, you know, going to the Gulf. And these rivers used to be like any other rivers in the world, you know, water, clean water running in. Now these rivers are just stagnant lakes of stagnant water, full of garbage, and composed animals and these kind of things. And families are living in the middle of this very contaminated atmosphere or environment. And these families live in the, for example, in bombed schools, in Al-Quds school. It is a very old and big school in Basra. 42 families live. In the athletics faculty, which is a beautiful new building. Again, it was bombed and destroyed and looted in the 2003 invasion. 50 families live there. And they live in a very, very bad condition. No running water, no electricity, and the building is, broken. It's destroyed. And they live like 10 people in one room, and they are all of them are unemployed. The problem now is that the governorate of Basra, they want to send them out, take them out of these buildings because they want to, these are public buildings. But the issue is where these families go if they are, sent out of these buildings. I also worked in Hille, to the south. Hille is... by the way, Basra is something like 500, 600 kilometers south. It is on the border of Kuwait. It is the southern area of Iraq. I worked also in Hille. Hille is 100 kilometers south of Baghdad. Again, Hille is not better than Basra as far as the infrastructure and the city, the streets are concerned. But I went there to attend the human rights meeting. The meeting was in the building of the human rights, and it was organized by the human rights organization, but it was actually for all the political parties, all the organizations, all the representative of the community of Basra. They met in this building to create a committee to represent the Hille people, to have any kind of dialogue with the occupation authorities, because things are so bad, and they want to find kind of community dialogue with the authority there, because obviously the government is not doing much about these difficulties: the water, the electricity, the housing, all these the compensation issues, all these difficulties. So the people decided to elect or create a committee representing them to have this kind of link or dialogue with the authorities. I worked mainly in the west of Iraq. This is this area is called usually the hot spots, which is there's fighting and bombing and this kind of things. This is a very unlucky part of Iraq. These people, these cities, are considered by the American authorities to be hosting terrorists, and maybe there are fighters, there are terrorists, there are resistance, or maybe. But what's happening is that the American authorities are bombing the cities, and when they bomb the cities, they bomb houses, hospitals, bridges, schools, streets, shops, marketplaces. Like, maybe you are familiar with Fallujah. And of course, Fallujah is only one example. There are tens of Iraqi other cities that were bombed by the American troops. Ramadi, Rawa, Haditha, Heat, Al-Qa'im, of course, three times. Al-Karable, Al-Abadi, Tal-A'far, Samarra now, Najaf, all these cities were exposed to fighting and bombing by the American troops. And when they bomb, as I said, they don't spare civilian. Actually, the whole city is civilian because there are no military or bases or military or army, Iraqi army to fight. What's happening in Iraq is not war. because I see many slogans, many signs say end the war, you know. But the thing is that it's not a fighting between two armies. It's the American troops there in Iraq, and there are fighters or insurgency or terrorists, no matter what the name is. But there are people who are holding the gun against the Americans, and this is what's going on. And the people, the civilians, are killed in the process. And I'm talking about thousands of them. And they are killed in a very cruel way, because many of the families are buried under the rubble in these areas. Many people bleed to death because when they bomb a city, they don't allow any ambulance to move. They bomb hospitals. And the other part of the tragedy is that many families in this area, you know, run away from the bombing. And of course, they run away to the nearest place that they think is safe. And the nearest place is either the desert, so they have camps of tents, or in public buildings, youth centers, schools, all of them during the bombing are, you know, the people live in there. Every classroom is, you know, a family or two families live there. And of course, no schools, because I mean, students do not go to school at these times because the school is occupied by families. And of course, these refugees, this is what I work on mainly in the last almost 2 years, is that I visit these families and I see what they need, and I try to collect whatever I can collect, like food, medicines, clothes, heaters, water, whatever. And I try to take to them whatever I can collect. But again, it's not enough, because there are thousands of families there at the period of the bombing on the thing. And what I collect is something that covers a family for a week, for example. So it is. I mean, but you cannot just sit and, you know, and look, and, you know, you have to do something to help somebody.
You mentioned Samarra. Can you tell us what's going on there?
Oh, Samarra, a month ago, maybe a month ago, a shrine was blasted. And this is a very important and historical place. It's very beautiful, of course, for the Muslims. In this shrine, one of the 12 imams are buried. Actually, two of them, a father and a son, Al-Askari and Al-Hadi. They are buried in this shrine. They are one of the 12 imams in the Shia doctrine. But the shrine is in Samarra, which is a Sunni area. The majority of people are Sunnis, because of course there are Shia. By the way, this is not the first time. Samarra is a historical city in Iraq, very old, from the Abbasid Caliphdom. And there was until this moment a very well-known minaret, and it is like a screw. And it goes up, I think, 30 or more feet. It's very, very big and very historical, very old. This minaret was bombed months ago, but it was not mentioned. It's a very important historical site in Iraq, one of the most important, but nothing was mentioned about it in the media, unfortunately. Now the shrine is bombed, this shrine. And after the bombing of the shrine, the American troops and the Iraqi police and army decided to invade or to bomb the city, because they said that it's becoming a stronghold of the resistance or the insurgency. For the last 2 days, the bombing began, and in the first day, the hospital said that there are more than 80 people who were killed and more than 200 who were injured, and the majority of them were civilians. And this was confirmed by the American military spokesman, because he said that we went to Samarra, but we didn't face any resistance. So, I mean, the question is, if there are no resistance, if you are not sure that there are fighters or resistance there, or insurgency, or Islamists, so why did you bomb the city? Why did you kill these people? And what happens, I mean, when they bomb the city, is that it's not the bombing, which, you know, as I said, include schools, hospitals. I don't know now, until now what happened in Samarra because I was here, but I know about the bombing in other, as I said, other cities. People do not get medical help when they are injured. Many of the people I know died of bleeding. They keep on bleeding, and there are women, there are young people, they keep on bleeding for, you know, maybe 24 hours until they die. So this is, I think, a very cruel crime, and I call upon the American troops, the American government, the American people, please stop bombing Samarra immediately. As far as there are no, you know, you didn't face any resistance in it, why bombing it? This is one point. And second, please don't bomb any Iraqi city. You can look for these armed men in many other different ways. It is illogical, and it is, I think, illegal. Of course, it is illegal. It's not, I think, in the international law, it is illegal to bomb a city. But it is illogical and it is criminal to bomb a city from a very high altitude and to target an armed man who is hiding in one of the corners of a very big city of hundreds of thousands of people. It is simply illogical. So please try to find some other way. I'm addressing the American troops, the American government, the American authorities in Iraq. Find whatever way you can find, but don't bomb the cities, because you are killing children, you are killing women, you are killing families, and you are destroying houses, and these people have nothing to do with anything.
One of the other things we see regularly on the media is U.S. forces going in and raiding houses. Can you talk about what happens in these raids? And I understand there's also people who are disappeared that doesn't get covered in U.S. media.
Yeah. Well, the first question about raiding houses, this is, you know, when I meet families after their houses is raided, the first thing they tell me, we pray to God that no Iraqi family is going to be exposed to this experience. It's so horrible. When they raid, of course, always after midnight, something like 2-3 in the morning. And they surround the area first by tanks and helicopters in the sky. And they raid the house very, very violently, shooting, exploding the gates and the doors. They don't knock. They explode. They put explosives and explode the doors. And they dash in the house very violently, 10, 20, 30 of them, heavily armed. And you can imagine, and of course, always there is no electricity. It's dark. And you can imagine you are sleeping in your bedroom with your children, with your wife, with your family. And they dash into the house, tens of people. And American soldiers are big, you know, they are very tall, they are big, well-built. And they dash. With armed and shooting, and many times they kill and they injure families and I have many stories of this kind. They dash into the house. The first thing they do is they take the men on one side, and they put the women and the children on other side. Sometimes they take them out in the cold, and they begin searching the house. They search everything in the house, and it happened many times that things are taken from the house. Jewelry, documents always, computers, money, anything that is that they think is useful or they want to, they take things. And we have many stories, and many people went to the American asking for their things to be returned back. After this, Of course, the man of the house or the men, whatever, their hands are tied and their eyes are again tied, and very violently, and many times they push them to the ground, their faces to the ground in front of their family. And in one of the stories, at least that I covered, the man of the house was shot and he was bleeding in front of his family, and they dragged him out and the blood was, you know. And the family, after they left, the family wanted to know what happened to the father, and they did not get any information. After many days, one of their relatives or neighbors or somebody who knows the family, he came to them. He said, "Listen, I was in Yarmouk Hospital, and I think your father is in the cold storage there. They found the body in the Yarmouk Hospital." After they searched the house, they arrest the men very violently, beating them or shooting them. Many of the stories they are taken bleeding out of the house, and the man is gone. And here begins the agony of the family, looking for the father or the son or the husband. It takes 3 weeks for his name to appear in the lists, on the computers and the records of the authorities, of the troops. And this is if he is lucky, because many times the names do not appear on the records, and the families keep on looking, asking in the military bases, in the human rights ministry, human rights organizations, Iraqi Ministry of Justice, Ministry of Defense, Interior, whatever they think they can ask. And this point takes us to the issue of the missing. This is again a very big problem in Iraq now. By the way, before we go to the missing, I want to say that there are tens of thousands of Iraqis who are detained, for some of them for 2 years, for 3 years, for 10 months, and they are just waiting there for their files to be processed. And I know of one man at least who spent 2 years in prison, and then they looked in his file, and his name is Muhammad, and they looked in his file and they said, "Yeah, your file is clean, you are good, you can go." And of course, in these 2 years, he was exposed to all kind of difficulties in prison, in Abu Ghraib, in the airport, and in the end he was in Kambuka in the south. Kambuka is a very big detention camp on the Kuwaiti borders. And after that, he was released. Of course, he was very lucky because he was released. There are many others who are still in prison. As I said, these people are lucky because their names are there, their numbers are there, their families can visit them. But there are others whose families do not know if they exist or not, simply. You know that the invasion of Iraq began on 20 March 2003, and the fall of Baghdad was in 9 April. And then the President Bush announced that May 1st, 2003 is the end of the military operation. Well, the military operation did not stop until now, until this moment, as you know, Samarra is. But anyway, this is a point. So we have prisoners from March 20 to May 1st, 2003. And beyond that, of course, there are many others after that. But this period, especially this period, if you go to any American military base authority, if you go, you ask about a person who disappeared in this time, they say, "We don't know. This is, we have information after May 1st. Before that, we don't have any information." Well, this is a very, again, as I said, a very big problem. I have, the number is between 5,000 to 15,000. And these are people who disappeared during that period. The families have many eyewitnesses that these people who disappeared were taken by the American troops. They have eyewitnesses from the prisoners who were released and they come to the family and they say, I saw your son, your father, your husband in that prison, in that tent at that time, and he was okay, he was ill, whatever his situation is. And of course the families are very happy because they heard about their father, their son, whatever, and they go, or they run to Kambuka or to Abu Ghraib, to the American authorities, and the American authorities deny that this man exists. I simply do not understand why they deny that. If he is there, I mean, why don't you tell his family? You can keep him for whatever. But if he died, just tell them that this man was killed or he died in prison or what. I mean, give them some information about their loved ones, because these families, wives, daughters, sons, mothers, are, you know, it's a very sad tragedy. They are going around, they are old women, women who do not know, you know, some of them do not even know how to read and write. And they go around and around and around, you know, clinging to any glimpse of hope, whatever they hear from some family, and they run and to ask about their. The other side of this issue is that whether they are detainees or missing, these people have families, and they support their families financially speaking, and these families are left on their own. And in Iraq, when I say family, it is not, as you understand it here, a family of two or three persons. No. In Iraq, at least 10 people in a family. Iraq is loved to have children, many children. And you can have in one house children from the age of 20 to 1, 30 to 1. They love family. They love children. They have many children, boys. And you have in the same house, you know, maybe three generations of the same family. So we have very big families in Iraq. And you can imagine these thousands of people, their psychological condition, their anxiety, their fear, their waiting, just waiting to hear something from their sons or husbands or fathers.
We only have a couple minutes left. What final words would you like to leave with listeners?
I would love, well, I have been here. Let me thank the American people for being so wonderful, so hospitable, so understanding. But I want them to please look for the truth, look for the reality. You have access. You can find. There are alternative media. There is the internet. There are many websites that you can go and you can look for the reality. And when you see the reality, please spread it. Tell your friends. Tell your neighbors. And react accordingly. Please ask your government. Please. Put whatever pressure you can put on your government to end this occupation of Iraq, to change its policy against the Iraqi people, because it's not in our interests, neither in the American interest, this violence and these killings, and it's only creating more hatred. And if you go to the history of Iraq in the last 3 years, you'll find that things went every day, went from bad to worse, to every day. It's not going anywhere. It's going down, you know. So this simply has to stop. And for the American government, please, to stop this occupation, to end this occupation, and to help the Iraqis to create for themselves a government that they want, without trying to impose on them your kind of democracy, of freedom. Let them choose for themselves the democracy and the freedom they can manage. And please stop the killing and stop the injustice in Iraq.
All right. Well, I want to thank you for coming in this morning.
Thank you.
We've just been talking with Aman Ahmed Kamas. She is a journalist, translator, and activist, a former director of the International Occupation Watch Center in Baghdad, and member of the Women's Will Organization. And she is speaking two venues today that you can hear her. She will be one of the speakers at the rally that's happening this afternoon at 1 o'clock at the Federal Building. And she will be doing a much more extensive talk this evening, 7:30 p.m. at Trinity United Methodist Church in Ballard.